Hello, and welcome to Cubicle Confidential, weekly advice for the working stiff. I'm Chris DeSantis, and let me introduce my co-host, starting with A's, the audacious, the amazing, and the awfully assertive Mary Abajay.
Hey, that was really good. You could have just said the Abajayest of all the Abajays, and that would have caused a lot of trouble in my family. But hey, Chris DeSantis, and hello, dear Cubicle Confidential listeners. I am Mary Abajay, and it is my pleasure to introduce to you my co-host, the amicable, the acclaimed, and quite frankly, the awesomest, Chris DeSantis.
Is awesomest a word?
It is not, my friend.
Or the most awesome.
I think because we have the power of the microphone, the power of the podcast, we can make up as many words as we damn well like. Because, you know, it's a thing now. We can just make up words. I love making up words.
Well, that's spectacalicious.
Spectacalicious. Oh, that's a good one. So, Chris, how have you been?
Actually, been okay. Although we've sort of escaped sort of the heat wave that's affected most of the nation here in Chicago. So it's been pretty nice.
Aren't
a little traveling, you know.
Aren't you special?
I know. So it's been pretty good here. So, but other than that, yeah, kind of quiet. I wish I were doing more, you know, in terms of the summer. You know, when you have time off and you think you're going to do things and then you don't do much.
End up watching The Real Housewives, whatever, city.
Yeah.
And wasting some time. Yeah, I hear that. No, I know. I had the same thing, but it's so hot here in Washington, D.C.
Is it hot?
We did not escape the heat waves. So you just don't want to go out. But, you know, my husband and I have our new screened-in back porch, our lanai, as he calls it. And we are just practically living out there. So it's really nice. So we kind of feel like we're outside, but we have like a ceiling fan and a screened-in porch and electricity. So it's pretty nice.
I saw pictures. It's very nice, people. And by the way, Chris did it himself, right?
Well, he did parts of it himself. Let's be clear. We hired a company to do it. He did all the kind of the extra. Well, he designed it. He didn't do any of the construction.
Oh, okay. I thought he was involved with
he just managed it to those four people.
Wanted that's to, like, important. Him. You got to have somebody manage it.
Got to have someone managing. Speaking of managing, we're going to talk about organizational life today. And one of the most important aspects of creating high performance, right, in organizations. And as you know, that's really all around trust.
Yeah.
And so today we are going to be talking about trust in the organizations, how we get it, how we keep it. And I've got three questions from our dear, dear listeners around issues of trust in the workplace. So, Chris, have you ever had to work with someone whom you just didn't trust?
Oh, yes. It's a most difficult thing to, you just want to minimize your contact with them because you know that the person across from you, you just know, you can't believe them. You're worried what are they going to do behind your back? Oh no, it's not fun.
It's awful. And are you a person that trusts first or do you wait? Does someone have to earn your trust or do you initially start off with trust?
I think I'm naive in this. I probably am more trusting than I should be. I think that, in fact, in the work that I do, I have never used a contract unless it's asked of me.
Wow, that's pretty good. You know, I'm kind of like that too. I mean, we do a lot of proposals because our clients like that. But
well, government has a contract.
Well, government has it. Like, so the government, that's different, you know, and you better be sure to get that task order before you do any work for the government or you ain't going to get paid.
Right.
But I'm like you, I tend to trust first until I have a reason not to.
Right.
But when we work with groups, we find that people really split along that. Some people in a group will say like, oh no, you've got to earn my trust before I trust you. And some people are more like, no, I'll trust you. So I find that always a challenging thing to navigate when working with groups.
I think so. And by the way, it's the glue that holds an organization together, I think, in effect. The less trust you have, the more... Well, this whole hybrid workplace is really a consequence of trust in my mind.
I agree.
Is that, you know, if I trusted you, why would I care where you are?
Yeah.
I know what needs to be done will get done. But if I don't trust you, I have to have some evidence that you're actually doing what I want. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's gradients to that. Trust is the root.
You know, it's so weird because, you know, I've had a couple of situations in my business. One was with a business partner, not a consulting business, a different business. And he just would lie about just the smallest, stupidest things. Mm. Like, what'd you have for lunch today, Dave? And he'd be like, oh, I went to barbecue. And I know for a fact, I saw me eating Chinese food. So like, because he lied about all those little things, right. Like, I just thought, I can't trust you on anything. It was really interesting. But for that, I could pinpoint why I didn't trust him, right? Because mm-hmm. he was a psychopathic liar. But I've had other people that I've worked with where I don't know what it was. It was something about like their lack of transparency or their lack of giving out information that I just could never fully trust them.
Well, I also think too, that, and this is part of just the human bias, is we do this thin slicing. Basically, we have an impression that we have rather rapidly. And then and that impression takes microseconds in effect. And then we look for justification of our impression.
Yeah.
So if my impression of you is doubtful, then I look for the reasons to doubt you as opposed to the assurance that you shouldn't be doubted. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but what about thick slicing? Because my second example was about thick slicing.
Yeah,
like, I've been around this person for a while and there's just something about them. I don't know what it was, but it just led me not to trust them.
Well, again, that's not thick slicing because you're saying you don't have evidence. You just got a vibe.
A vibe, exactly.
Yeah, I think the vibe landed early and then it came and it sort of, and it kept ripples alive, as it were, simply because you had this doubt already planted. The seed was planted.
Yeah, and then after thin slicing, I fell prey to the confirmation bias error.
I think you might have. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you were wrong about this person.
Not wrong about this person.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying you didn't cite evidence of being, about it. You just said, I got this bad feeling. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I'm going to reflect upon that at the end of the show, whether I wronged this person because I never trusted them or whether my gut was right and I just never got the evidence. It's very interesting.
I think another thing, though, that what we make decisions about is how are they interacting with others relative to how they interact with us. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Because I've seen people that are very nice, and then I've seen how they talk about others or how they engage others. And I'm thinking, wow, that's not nice. That's not nice. And what are you saying about me that you're saying about them? You know what I'm saying? Like,
Oh, yeah. I totally get that. All right. Well, Chris, if you're ready, I've got three really great questions for us.
I am so ready. I trust that you do.
And I trust that you're going to give thoughtful and fabulous answers to these questions.
All right. Thank you, everybody. That's our show.
Good night, Detroit. Tip your waitresses. All right. First question is from Catering to My Needs in Portland.
Hello. Okay, first off, I'm the first to admit it. I'm a micromanager. Although in my defense, paying close attention to details has gotten me to where I am now, that's the problem. I work for a corporate catering company, and I've been promoted, again, this time to oversee all corporate events. It means I will be doing more client-facing work and less client delivery. Frankly, I just don't trust the people reporting to me to do as good a job as I did. How do I either learn to let go or better still control things from on high? Signed, Catering to My Needs in Portland.
Love this one for so many reasons.
Yeah, I like it too. I like this person too. You know why I like this? First of all, let me just say this. Congrats. Congrats on the promotion. I think it's earned. And secondly, what I also like is congrats on knowing who you are.
Yeah.
You know, what you have done, in my view, you recognize what got you where you are won't get you where you're going. I think that's sort of paraphrasing Marshall Goldsmith, really. So my first thought was, you know, why would you fight this? Why don't you leverage it? You see what I'm saying? If it's an innate trait of yours and it's sort of one of your, let's call it for lack of a better word, your superpower, why don't you leverage your superpower? And so where does it serve you? Well, here's what my thought was. You love the details. That's what a micromanager gets into, the details. What other people don't love is you're in their details. So I think what you have to do is, why don't you create a performance standards? Basically, create metrics by which everyone could be objectively measured against. You see, when you have that in place, you are doing what you like to do anyway, finding what the metrics are, right? And then, in my view, what you do is you let your people self-evaluate against the metrics that you create, and then you compare that against the metrics that you want. My point would be, you now see what is accurate relative to what you wanted to accomplish and how they see themselves relative to that. Because I think for you is, trust comes slowly for you. And in this case, letting go of this will be slower than fast. And so when you accumulate evidence around that and letting go, I think you can spend time where you should be spending time, and that is building client relationships, which is what you want to do all along, meaning that's what your new job is. So anyway, that's my two cents on that.
Your two cents are perfect. Your two cents are worth $1 million, Chris DeSantis, because I think they're really perfect. I have a couple things to add but you're right on track here. And I agree. You know, I think that I congratulate you, catering, for your self-awareness and your understanding that you need to grow and learn. And let's be honest, this is going to be an important and probably a very challenging transition, for them, right? So in addition to everything Chris says, I want you to really start thinking about the art of delegation. And understanding how to do it well. And it's not that you're just handing off tasks to people, but you are developing and empowering them. A micromanager is more of a command and control kind of a manager, where you're going to be much more of an empowering manager. And that's going to get you more highly developed staff who are more committed rather than just compliance for your details. So I want you to also see this as not only a gift to you to really expand your team, their capabilities, but also your bandwidth. You know, one, and I love everything Chris said, you got to be really clear about your expectations. You got to be a little bit of a teacher here. You got to really set the objective standards. All that is perfect. I thought I might recommend you read a book called The Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande. I love that book.
It's one of Mary's favorites.
One of my favorites. It's just, it will enable you to create a checklist for every detail that you care about. So that's just a tool that you can think about. I also recommend that you might considering being really honest with your team about this next step in your leadership journey, that you are a micromanager, you know that's your tendencies, and have an honest conversation about what you're going to need in order to let go. And be really clear about that and hold people accountable to what they agree to do. And also might look at a little bit of situational leadership. Like think about your team and think about who does need a little bit more hands-on and who needs a little more hands off. I think this is a great example of not treating everybody like they're exactly the same. So those who are a little bit more junior in their career, you can be a little more hands-on. Those who are a little more senior in their career, more experienced, then do much more hands-off, I think it'd be helpful. And, you know, be patient, mentor yourself, you know, have frequent conversations with your team. How am I doing on the micromanaging? Do you feel like you have enough autonomy? And just keep moving forward. I think, as Chris said, you really do need to start embracing your new role because you can't be looking forward if you are constantly looking backward.
Ooh.
You like that one?
Yeah. That's good. You don't have eyes in the back of your head. You don't have eyes in the back of your head. I was thinking one other thing, because it tied to what you're saying, is this notion of falling back on where we are comfortable. You see, this person is in a double bind. One is they have to let go of something they're particularly good at to give it to people that they believe may not be as good. And secondly, they're stepping into a realm of something they're not particularly good at all, meaning that there's going to be discomfort.
Or they don't know if they are. They're not as good as we are.
Because they haven't had the experience allowed to do this yet. So in that sense, I think there are two areas of discomfort. And where we do is we look for comfort. We look for assurance and we fall back. Where we are coming. This goes to your point. We go backward. And so be cautious of that. I like that point Mary made this about being more reflective of what am I feeling here and why am I feeling it?
Yeah. So. And you know, the thing is around the details is, you know, catering really is a detail-oriented business, right?
Yeah.
But it's also it's also more than that. It's more than just, you know, are the canopies being passed at the right time? It's also about creating magic for your client. And so that's going to be your job now, is to help create the magic for your client. And sometimes a detail doesn't make that happen. It's a feeling they get. It's the quality of the service that they get. It's the look of the service that they get. So I think it's really important that you understand the details, which you're really good at, but now you're going to go on to the next step. How do I make this client feel like this is the best event or the best service? Yeah. Exactly.
Well, the other thing too, again, tying to what Mary just said, is you're a micromanager. You're into the details. You know what I would do? Pay attention to your counterparts further up the food chain,
yeah,
who are doing this with clients, and say, what are the details that work for your clients, and leverage that. There's, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Use your gift.
You know, another tool this person could use is they could, for the first couple of engagements, maybe for the first 6 months, after every engagement, every client engagement, bring the team together, do a quick 15-minute after action review, get the team kind of focused on what they could have done more or less or differently, what they did well, and that will help develop them, I think, and also help give you some comfort that they know what they're doing.
Yeah, the old post-mortem, although it's such a tragic phrase.
I know. That's why I like the after-action review, which I think is an army term.
AAR.
Yeah.
AARP.
All right. So
that was great.
I think that would be really great, and I really hope the best for catering to my needs. And you know, I really do encourage you to be honest with your team, because if they know you're working on this, it's going to enable them to be more empowered to tell you when you're landing on the mark or not on the mark.
I'm good.
Done.
We're good.
All right. We're going. All right. Are you ready for question number two?
Yes. I think we really helped question number one. So let's make it a run a roll.
Chris, I got to be honest. I think we nailed it.
I like that you're so objective.
If I do say so myself. All right. Question number two is from Fool Me Once in Fremont. You know, there's a Fremont, California, and a Fremont, Ohio.
I don't know. Did they indicate which one this is?
No. I'm going to assume. Well, we'll figure out. It's probably going to be California, because the Ohio Fremont, Ohio is very small. All right. Are you ready?
Yep.
Dear Mary and Chris, I'm tired of getting thrown under the bus. I'm in accounts payable. I have internal clients who send me invoices from their vendors that need to be paid. One person, let's call her Maggie, frequently forgets to send me the vendor's invoice, and then the vendor calls me complaining. Or she doesn't review the corporate expense policies with vendors, and so their invoice falls outside of guidelines, and I have to be the one to tell them. She never takes responsibility and always, always blames me. Now, out of the blue, she wants me to work on a corporate level process improvement initiative that is supposed to streamline the invoicing. It's an opportunity for me to be seen by the higher-ups, but knowing her, I could just as well be the fall guy. Can I say yes, and if so, how can I avoid the bus? Signed, Fool Me Once in Fremont.
Ooh, Chris, this is at first glance, I thought this was really easy, and I started thinking about it a little bit more, and it is a little bit difficult. So I'm going to pass over to you to give the first answer.
Well,
what say you?
Well, I think, first of all, let's start with Maggie. I think you got to reframe this, because I don't think Maggie necessarily has a problem with you. I think Maggie has a problem with taking any heat, and I think she might be afraid of conflict. And so in that sense, you have to step away from this thing. This is a personal attack on you, and there's somebody who's trying to throw you under the bus. No, this is an insecure person. That's what you're dealing with. And so what we have to think about is, how do we make them feel more secure? The other thing here is, this is a great opportunity. So you really need to say yes to the dress in this. So this is a great opportunity, because you can be seen. And so to be seen, though, I want you to be what you're best at doing. Be diligent, be prepared for the higher ups. My advice, quite clearly, is document everything. Here's what they're going to want from you. They're going to want a very clear as-is process. This is process mapping. We got to understand what is the existing process, and then you have to design this in terms of a way that says, okay, I'm going to show them what the existing process is. I'm going to get sign-offs from everyone. This means cover your ass. So you're going to show Maggie, you're going to show Maggie's sponsor, you're going to show the executive champion. This is how we're designed the existing design. And then when you redesign it, bring them back into the loop, and again, getting them to sign off on what you're trying to do here. So the point is, keep them in the loop, Make sure there are no surprises. The other thing I would do in this case, because you want it, we want to calm Maggie down, is you want to comments about Maggie, make sure her contributions to this project are highlighted. Make it sound like, oh, she was very helpful here and that. But having said that, I do not want you to shy away from taking credit for what you do. I want you to say, if you said, okay, here's what I found in this area, this, when I interviewed these people, I did this, I did these things, and then we collaborated on coming up with this. You see what I'm saying? Take some of the credit here and give, and again, the documentation also precludes Maggie from saying, well, wait a minute. So in that sense, your ass is covered. Anyway, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's a completely full and robust answer. And I agree with everything you said. This is about documentation. This is about being proactive. I think you absolutely need to get involved in this project. I see the upside so much more strong than the downsides. I really don't really see much of a downside.
No.
And, you know, it's very, it's kind of ironic too that you have this opportunity, right? That the person that's driving you crazy, but at least you have some examples of how the process doesn't work, and you don't have to name her name, right? But you have some examples.
For instance,
yeah, you know, the only two things I would add to Chris's excellent advice is, you know, at the start of the project, just get really clear on your roles and your responsibilities and how you and Maggie are going to work on this together. I'm sure there's going to be other people. So really take some time to map out a good process around accountability, responsibility. How are you going to, you know, in case there's any misunderstandings. Yeah. Then the other thing I would say, and, you know, this is kind of up to you to decide, you know, if it's possible politically and you are really concerned about being the fall guy, you know, you might want to talk with your supervisor, your boss, or a mentor, someone that could give you some advice on how to be, make sure that you're protected. And my guess is they're going to give you the advice that Chris DeSantis just gave you about really documenting and being sure. Because, you know, if you are concerned, you might not be a bad idea. Again, we don't know if Maggie is doing this on purpose or if she's just a flighty person, but if you think she might have some vindictiveness in her, then it wouldn't hurt to have a political ally on your side before you go into this. Low-key one.
I think that's great. I hadn't thought of that. I agree that her supervisor should be, or her mentor should be keyed into this, saying, here's the situation. This is my trepidation. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's my trepidation, and here's the experiences that I've had. But at the same time, I think one of the things you could do is you could probably help Maggie with this, saying, hey, Maggie, look, I know this one time you sent a vendor in, or this time you tend to send vendors in. What's missing in this that might have helped you with a reminder? You see what I'm saying? So, but I wouldn't do that in front of others. It's just you and Maggie. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and who knows? Maggie might. If you take some time to develop a good working relationship with her, and give her the benefit of the doubt, she might say to you, you know, you might learn something about why she wasn't really good with the process. So
if she feels safe, right? Exactly.
I think fool me once, this is a win-win-win, and I think this is a lovely ironic turn of events that's going to really help you make some positive contributions to your organization. And secretly get back at the person that's annoying you.
Yes, you're turning lemons into lemonade.
Love, love, love.
Lovely. That was so good.
That was a good one. All right, we have time for one more. Are you ready?
Yeah, we're on a roll.
This is from Faking It in Phoenix.
Hello, love the show. What I like about it is that you two appear to really get along. Do you? I ask because I have been asked to go to college campuses to do recruiting. I have been paired with someone I find difficult to like. I think he's arrogant, loud, and a bit inappropriate. The problem is when he is around potential recruits, he's all kinds of charming. But when we're on the road, he's all those things I hate. We're supposed to look like teammates since that's what we're recruiting, but I have had a hard time pretending to like this guy. Any advice on how to get past his obnoxiousness? Signed, Faking It in Phoenix.
Wow.
Well, you know what I love about this is every time I'm in Phoenix, I'm faking it because I hate Phoenix. I'm sorry, Arizona. Don't write me letters. It's just too damn hot there.
It is so hot there.
I like Arizona. I just don't like Phoenix.
I couldn't believe how hot it gets there. I remember going there one time at one of these fancy resorts, and I said, because they had misters everywhere, and I didn't understand the utility of a mister. You know what a mister is? Not a mister.
Oh, I do,
as in
honey. I have family in Phoenix. I'm there a lot.
Yeah. For people, I'm not talking about mister as in mister or missus. I'm
talking about water misting.
Wadding misting. And they were all low. And I thought, well, wow, well, that's weird. Everyone gets damp all the time. And then I'm there and I'm going, oh my God.
Missed me.
I'd be dead. I was standing in front of them all the time.
They were like, who's the mister hogging the mister?
Exactly.
Hey, mister, can you move away from the mister?
Oh my God. Because now this I understand. It was crazy. But anyway, I know we digress. This faking it, though, it's an interesting issue because this person that you have to work with clearly has a duality. So he knows what he's doing. So he must know that you know. You find him obnoxious. And my guess is, since he knows you know, he doesn't care. So he's doing what he wants to do the way he wants to do it. So I say, look, I don't see him changing. I don't see him. He's not going to change for you.
No.
What's the gain here? In fact, he might be enjoying this. He might enjoy your apparent discomfort.
As Popeye says, I am what I am. He is what he is.
Yeah. So my advice here is learn to play his game. You know, when you're both on, I think be really on, really on, like out on him. Meaning if he's that charming, charm plus one. Be as most pleasant, your most gracious self as you can imagine. And then when you're alone, starve him of attention. Make him invisible to you. Only recognize him when he comes close to behaving like a decent human being. I mean, I would just freeze him out. People, this guy wants attention. That's what he's doing. This is all about attention. So be very begrudging in the amount of attention you give him off stage, but lavish attention on him when he's on stage. I think eventually it's sort of like, Pavlovian, he starts to learn that what exactly he's missing by being an ass. That's my advice.
Oh my God, Chris DeSantis, we could not have come at this differently.
Oh, you have a different approach?
Oh my God, I have a really nice approach.
The nice guy. No, you're supposed to be the hard ass.
I know, this is so funny. I was going to say, oi, like this is be really hard for me. I'm very hard at faking it when I don't like somebody. I do not have a poker face. I would just like, but I think if you're going to have to deal with this guy when you're quote, on the road, and mm-hmm. I'm not talking about when you're in front of your clientele, your recruiters, your recruits. I was going to say, you know, this is going to take some emotional intelligence. This is going to take some self-control.
Right? Yeah.
So,
like me.
I know. So I was going to say, try to find something that you like about this person. You know, be open-minded. Maybe you can create some shared interests. Try to appreciate something that they bring to the table. You know, something about them that you do like.
Yeah.
Really focusing mostly on the work goal. I would also say, you know, watch your inner dialogue and your mantra. You know, because when we really don't like somebody, we start our inner dialogue starts to be like, what a jerk. Like, really watch that, that you're not doing that. You know, I would also say, you know, try to separate, create some boundaries. So like when you're not in your work task of recruiting people, like take some time on your own. Just because you're on the road with this guy, it doesn't mean you have to have every meal with him or mm-hmm. sit next to him on planes. Like give yourself some space. If he's doing things like, I don't know, shouting at waitresses or whatever, you could gently correct him and say, hey, could you not do that in front of me? I don't really like that. Or that's not mm-hmm. the way I like to treat our service people. You know, I just think at the end of the day, you just have to maybe you get a mantra, or maybe you just think, I am stepping in the role. I am acting. I'm stepping in the role of someone who likes this person and I don't. And make it a game of yourself to be nice and tolerant of this person. Just remember, this trip won't last forever. You'll get home soon and focus on the goal of getting recruits. So that's what that was my advice.
But wow.
I kind of like yours better.
Yeah, no, I see your point. I think your point is generous in terms of the benefit of the doubt, and there must be some sort of a diamond in the rough here. Maybe
there
that's
might be something worthwhile about
redeemable.
This human being.
There's a redeemable human.
This is like the angel and the devil on the shoulder. You're the devil.
Because
try to find something nice about him. You're like,
no, I get your point. But here's the other thing I was thinking too, because they don't clarify this. Is this a man or a woman who wrote us?
I think it was a man.
If it was a man who wrote us and then being nice, you'll get more credit for being nice. If it's a woman who wrote this and being nice, I think you become a doormat.
Yeah.
I think you should just call him. I would call him on this. Say, hey, what is the deal, Fred? You are all just sugar and spice in front of people, and mm-hmm. you're a d- when we're not.
You know, you could, if you actually took the time to be open-hearted and open-minded and got to know this person, you could actually have a few cocktails one night and just say, you know, like, you have two different personalities, and one I really like and one I really don't.
I know, but if he does have two different personalities and he's had a lot of cocktails, who are you going to be talking to? Is that Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde across the table? Yeah, well, it's interesting. I say... Mary's point, it has validity. I think you could be this person with them if you feel at their core there might be a good human being here. There might be somebody.
Or Chris DeSantis, just a human being.
Well, I don't know. In my case, in this one, is they turn it off, they turn it on, they know what they're doing. And if they know what they're doing, that's shitty.
Yeah. Well, except that you could be right. You could be right. There's always the chance, but we are always all turning it on when we're in our job function role, right? I mean, to some extent, we're always faking it extent, like when we're in a job function role. It'd be interesting.
You know where my problem is not with this. It's my problem is I'm projecting on experiences that I've had with people like this.
Yeah.
And I have met people that are intentionally provocative. Have you ever met a person who's intentionally provocative?
Yes, I hate them.
And this person they're talking about has this quality of provocation, meaning that they're creating obnoxiousness to get a rise out of you.
Right.
And I'm saying you call it like it is really early on. Make them invisible. They're Claude Rains to you.
Well, you know, the other thing is Claude Rains, that was a really old reference. Half, like two thirds of our audience was like, who?
He was the first invisible man, people.
But you know, like, for this, like there's also the aspect of you could be dealing with a true jerk who's a real phony. Like, you know, who's that Marianne Williamson who's running for president? Like, have you ever, she's like the, you know, spiritual guru.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She is, you read reports about her from people that work for her. She's a nightmare. Like,
really?
She, oh my God, we'll talk about this next time we do toxic bosses. She's in one of those examples of people that in real life are not the sweet light kindness that they show up in. Are we gonna get sued for that?
But no, why would we get sued?
Well, because I'm just reporting articles that have been
written about her. You're just reciting what you have read, not that you endorse the
That's what I read. So trust me, people.
Trust me.
All right, Chris, we have just gone on for way too long.
That was good.
So good luck to all of our listeners. Thanks for writing in. Thank you to Jack Edinger, our amazing overworked, underpaid producer, who we trust implicitly to make us sound good.
You got that right.
If you have a workplace question or a cubicle dilemma, give us a shout. No question is too easy. No question is too hard. Lots of ways to reach us. You could email us to info@cubicleconfidential.com, tweet us @cubicleconfide1, or find us on LinkedIn. Chris DeSantis, Mary Abajay, or you guessed it, Cubicle Confidential, were easy to find. Until we see you next week, we want you to work hard, be kind, trust those people that should be trusted, and if you can't,
call us.
All right, see you next week.